For several weeks, we have been taking our Sunday morning lessons from the book of James. I think that all of us have been impressed with the fact that James is the epistle of common sense in the way in which we introduced it in our first lesson. One cannot study this particular book without being impressed that James goes right to the core of the matter, and he deals with those problems that every human being has a problem with. I would not have any idea how many of you have come to me after the sermons have been preached and said, that is exactly the problem that I am guilty of, and stated that you're going to try to straighten it up. If there is an individual here who has said that these lessons has not affected you, then I am absolutely certain that you have not been listening. For I am confident that there is not a human being on the face of this earth that has reached the state of perfection to where they can say, I have read the book of James and I am not guilty. James has been dealing with those things that go right down to the heart of the matter. He goes right down into the human mind. He gets right down into the heart of where it is talking about, do we really and truly have faith, or are we double-tongued? He gets down with the idea of the very thought that we have of our fellow man. He deals with the human tongue, and he shows how dangerous it is. Now, I've said all of that today to introduce the lesson that we're going to be talking about. Today, the lesson that we're going to be talking about is one that I'm sure that all of us will say, well, I might have a little problem with it, but really, it is no big deal. It is something that is not going to affect us. It's going to be rather dull and boring. It's something that every one of us has known for all of our life. It's something that every preacher has preached on. It is something that we say, it is just an idiom or an old cliche. Certainly, it is not a real big deal. If I am guilty of it, it is not one of the biggest sins that we ever had. So then, as we begin to look at this, we're going to see that as we see the thing that James points out, we're going to feel as though it doesn't go to the core of the matter. It really doesn't affect us in our everyday life. Now, right after this, James is going to get back into that material that goes right down to the core of the matter again. He's going to be dealing again with that attitude of heart and getting down in those things that every one of us can see we're really guilty of. Now we say, well, as we look at this, is it a sin? Well, James is dealing with the sins that are common to human beings. Yes, James is going to say it is an evil thing. But I would submit to you that the lesson today is going to deal about a sin that we seldom think about. It is not considered immoral even by Christians. It breaks no law. It is admired by the world. It is taught in the schools. And it is upheld by the courts. And so you can see, really, why it is no big deal. Now you say, what is this sin that has these qualifications to it? There are no sins that Christians do not consider immoral. Yes, there is. There's not a one in this building today that considers the thing we're going to talk about an act of immorality. You say, why, they're not a sin in the books that the school system or the courts would not be opposed to in some way or another. Yes, there is. There is not a lesson ever taught. There is not a decision ever rendered that would even start to condemn what James says is a sin. You say, what is this sin? This mediocre blah thing that we're going to be talking about today. Let me read you what James says in James chapter 4, verse 13. Come now, ye that say today or tomorrow, we will go into this city and spend the year there and trade and get gain, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. What is your life? Ye are a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that we ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall both live and do this or that. But now you glory in your boastings. All such glorying is evil. Now, what did James say? What was the sin? What is the terrible thing that James says is an evil thing as we began to read that passage? He reads the passage there talking about what life is, and we all understand what life is. I submit to you today that the sin that he's talking about is what we would say is a presumptuous confidence. That is, to put it in everyday language, it is considering the future and not recognizing the providence of God. Period. That's it. Now, who considers that immoral? Who is it that says that? Who would dare come to me today and say, Lowell, do you realize that we have a person in this congregation that is an immoral person? Why, do you realize that we have a member here that actually makes business plans without recognizing that God is in control? And my mouth would fly open, and I would faint to think we had such an immoral person in this congregation. Do you see what I mean? No, you wouldn't come to me with those words. And if you did, I'd kind of shrug my shoulder and say, what's new? It really is not the worst thing that ever happened. It's certainly not as bad as murder, is it? If you came and said, oh, we have a murderer here, we have an adulterer here, we have something of this, wow, now we're getting into the big thing. But this, nope, it's not immoral, it's not illegal, it is respected by the world. Everybody says that we need to be the master of our own faith. Everyone says that we need to learn the principles to live by and then go out and do it. And if you do it, you will be a success. And the problem with the unsuccessful people is merely that they are lazy, that they really do not do what they should do. And so we build those enterprises within our young children. And all the time, we do not put that one ingredient in, if God wills. So let's talk about that today, and let us see, really, some of the things that James has to say. When he starts out here, he says, come now. That is equivalent to saying what we would say, come now. Now, if you came up to me and you told me, Lord, I've got a terrible thing to tell you. And then you told me, you said, there's a mouse that's in your office. I'd look at you and grin, wouldn't I? And I'd say, now, come on now. That's what you call me away. That's why you got so excited. That's why you feel that we ought to burn the building down. Because there was a... Come now. You've got everything out of its proportion. You really need some help if you think we ought to burn the building down because there's been a mouse in my office. That's what James says. James now is looking at us. And for those of us who are guilty of this, he says, come now. In other words, get your priorities right. You're acting like little children. All right, now what is it that he says? He says, come now, ye that say today or tomorrow. Now let's stop on that word say for a minute. The word say there is a word for speak. And in the Greek language, they had two major words for speak. One of them is that if an individual talks a lot, he's just talking, blah, 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 his words, you say, boy, he's a speaker, isn't he? Doesn't he talk a lot? Yeah, but what did he say? Oh, he didn't say anything, but he talked a lot. Now, you see, we use words like that, and we understand what we're talking about. What we mean is that he says a lot of words, but there's no thought or consideration. There's no real meaning behind those words. Now, the Greeks had two words. They had one that was a word that meant jabbering, speaking, talking, like I'm doing right now. Then they had another one that meant the idea that is behind those words. When John says, in the beginning was the Word, talking about God, he uses this other one. He wasn't saying, in the beginning was a bunch of jabbering. He said, in the beginning was the Word, the concept in God's mind, the very thing. That's what Christ was. Now, that's what this is. It says right here, ye that say. He's not talking about people that just speaking off the cuff and saying, let's run over here, let's run over there, blah, 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 and they get through. They haven't said anything. But he's talking about a person that actually makes plans. A person that has a concept in their mind. The person that develops an idea in this way. So now here it is. It really doesn't make any difference what I'm saying. Whether I get out and talk a lot and say, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I did this and blah, 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 blah. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about me tomorrow being in my office, nobody in there, and I am making my plans. I am developing a concept, and here is the plan I decide. Without really ever saying anything. I want you to see we can commit this sin without really ever going out and saying anything to anybody. Now then he goes ahead and he says that, he said, now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into this city and spend a year there and trade and get gain. So then tomorrow I make my plan. Now then, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to stay here at Kirkland for 6 more months. Then I will go to Oregon, and I will remain there for a year. And while I am in Oregon for a year, I will do this, and I will do that. Now that I make my plans tomorrow on that basis. What have I done? Why, you say, why, Lowell, that's wise. You're making plans for the future. Yes, and I have just committed a grievous sin. I have just done something that the Bible says is an evil thing. And that is, I have presumed that I am in control of my life. I left God out of my plans when I made those kind of plans. As we began to look at this, think of the things that these fellows decided. James gives the illustration here. What they decided without God. They decided, first of all, they would leave without determining, I will leave if God wills. They determined the time that they would leave. They determined the city they would enter. They determined the length of time they would remain there, or the fact that they would remain there. They determined the length of time would be a year. They determined what they would do when they got there. We'll trade. And they determined that their business adventure would be a success. Now, they determined all of these things by saying, this is what I feel should be done, therefore, I'm going to do this. Now, you see, all these people are doing are making plans for the future. And that is wise, to make plans for the future. We all know that. The only thing that they are guilty of is they did not take God into consideration. They made these plans without determining if God so wills. If it is up to God, or if God wills, then this is what I'm going to do. Now, James is getting down into the providence of God. And for those of us who said, well, I believe that God worked at one time, maybe in an individual's life, but today, you know, it is up to every individual to do this or that. Well, I know the Bible teaches it's up to us to do this or that. I know the Bible teaches that we are to get out and we're to work and we're not to be sluggards and we're to do this and we're to do that and all of this. But I also know that the same Bible teaches that after we have done all that we can do in our planning and in our efforts, that we must always do it with the disposition and the attitude, if God wills. And that really is very important. It's very important, I might project, for those of us who determine that we're going to do a certain thing, and then it doesn't take place. Somehow or another, these great plans that we determined that we would do falls apart. Now, that can cause us to have a mental breakdown, can it? It can really cause us to have a mental breakdown. Unless they are made on the basis, if God wills. If it is in harmony with God's will, suppose that we have a financial collapse. How can you do that if you have plenty of money in the bank? Oh, if God wills. There are hundreds and thousands of ways of which God can take your business away from you. He can take your job away from you. He can take your health away from you. He can take anything away from you He wants to in 100,000 different ways. And unless we understand that, when we experience a great loss, it could cause us to have a mental breakdown. If we want to be the kind of person that God would have us to be, we must always put our life into the hands of God. And that's what James says is so important. Now I ask you a question. As we look here, and James says, now these fellows here, they decided they would go, and when they'd go, and where they'd go, and how long they'd be there, and what they'd do, and whether they would be successful or not. And you shake your head and you say, you know, that is terrible, isn't it? I mean, those fellows that James is describing, that is terrible. But do we not do the same thing? Do we not assume that we will have a today or a tomorrow or next year? Do we not all know that we could be killed in an automobile accident and yet not a one of us believe that we will? Do we not all understand, and could we not say, yes, a plane could crash with me on it, but certainly we fly without any fear because that plane won't crash with me on it? It always happens to somebody else. Isn't that really the attitude that we have? While we're young, do we not look at the old and say that certainly old people must die? And we understand that old people die. But there's only one problem with that as we live in this life. And that is that age and oldness and so forth is a relative term. That people in their 70s or 80s will sit around and talk about somebody at their age being young. I don't know how many times I have heard my mother, who's now 94, sitting there with her brothers and sisters and so forth, and talking about somebody dying, and then say, well, and were they young? Yeah, they were just young. They were only 79 or only 81. And here it is. I'm sitting there, you see, just shaking my head and saying anybody over 50 is old, old, old. And so my perspective is way out of proportion. I look at theirs, and theirs is way out of proportion. One philosopher said this. He said, old age is 10 or 15 years older than we are. Now, that really is what old age actually is. Middle age is very, very deceiving. When we talk about middle age, what is middle age? You try to find somebody who is middle-aged, and it's a rather difficult thing to do. When you get down to the people who have the dollars invested, let's take sports people, where they're paying these fellows millions of dollars. When you're 31, you're over the hill. It is something now where they're talking about the great running back of the Dallas Cowboys, Tony Dorsett. Big controversy now. And in national TV last Monday night, talking about this individual. And by the way, he still thinks he's a good football player. See, that's what he's doing. And they said he has to understand. He is 31 years of age. He's had it. And talking about, doesn't that sound funny? To those of you who are 31 and hearing people say you've actually had it. Let me give you an illustration. Labor Day weekend, Helen and I had a bunch of people over. The Brays had them over. We decided we'd have a bunch of games. Now, these are people that you know. These are young people. We didn't get any old fogies like Roy. We didn't want any heart attacks. See, we wanted to have people that could have a lot of fun. So we invited then young people in their 20s. And there's a couple in their 30s. Woe be unto them, but they're in their 30s. Well, they come over. Now, what I'm getting ready to tell you is the truth. We had a game out there. All they had to do is pick up a rubber raft, run down a hill, row across the river, run up the river a little ways, jump in the river, and then float down on a beach and run back up. And when that happened, everything started to fall apart.
And here it is, these people in their 20s, in their 30s, sitting around and panning and panning, and things began to disintegrate awfully fast. First of all, Valerie Huntsberry, the old lady, you know Valerie, the old lady, 20-some years of age, threw her hip out. She had to be carried up and put in the living room floor. We were in there nursing her, putting ice packs on her, wondering what to do. Kim came in and says, you better go out in the shop and see Carlos. He's laying out there just so sick that they don't know what to do. Now, Carlos is what, 22, something like that, way up there, you see. He's laying out there sick. So Helen runs out there to see about him. Somebody comes and says, Dina's down on the beach, sick. So I run down there, and there she sits in a chair. How you feeling? All bad, but Lorna's worse. And they had her laying in the river, throwing water on her, trying to revive Lorna. And somebody else, I forget who it was up there, they were real sick. And then they said Lyle thought he was having a heart attack. Seriously, he was up there. And I saw him rolling and groaning. I thought he was just putting on. But he really thought he was having a heart attack. Now, what am I getting at? I'm getting at something here that in a game, here are, shall we say, old people or young people? See, now I'm confused on what word to use. I just want to show that age really means nothing. Jim Adonis, great muscular athletic man, you know, that plays tennis all the time. Walking out across some rocks, falls down and injures, hurts his back. And so he gets all strung up. Dan, my boy, decides to go out. He goes out in the middle of the night and falls off of a rock 12 feet down to another rock and hit his head. He's still under doctor's care. What am I saying? All these people in their mid-20s. And the lesson that I'm saying is this. I'm saying age will deceive you. If you say you're going to get young people, well, next year, under 18. Or whatever it is. What I'm saying is, who's old? Who's middle-aged? Who's young? It depends on who you ask. Now, that is what James is telling us. This is where we get down to the point that James is telling us this. James is saying, what is your life? You see, that's the next thing that he's getting ready to tell us. What is your life? And he tells us what we need to do. Whatever your age, whether you're young or whether you're old. A couple people could have been killed. They fell so hard it would have been easy for them to have been killed. What is your life? What James says is, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. Proverbs chapter 27 verse 1 says, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day shall bring forth. Don't even talk about what is going to be on the morrow. You don't know what a day is going to be bringing forth. Among those young people, we had some other events for the next day. We had to cancel it. Had to call it off. It's going to be the biggie. It's going to be a fun. We had to call it off. We don't know what's going to be on tomorrow. Here it is. People were unable to do those particular things. Now let's go back to these guys James is talking about. He said things they didn't know. Look at this. They didn't know whether they would be alive to leave town. They didn't know whether they'd be sick and unable to go. They didn't even know whether there would be a tomorrow. They didn't know whether political conditions would hinder their traveling. They didn't know whether there would be natural disasters, such as earthquakes, that would keep them from going. They didn't know whether they would be permitted to enter the city. They didn't know whether they would be permitted to pursue the business. And if they did, they didn't know whether they would make a profit or not. Now, those are things that those people didn't know. And those are things that you and I do not know. As we begin to look at even tomorrow when we're out having fun and playing games. Remember in Luke the 12th chapter, that individual who has become a famous man because he committed this same sin, this one sin right here. Notice what it says in starting in verse 16. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully, and he reasoned within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have not wherewith to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou foolish one, this night the things which thou hast prepared, or this night thy soul is required of thee, and the things which thou hast prepared, whose shall they be? Here is an individual that made plans for the future, and he made plans for the future without God. He went to bed with his plans. I'll build bigger barns. And tomorrow, he was not here. In a commentary I was reading on James today, a teacher that I had in school wrote that commentary. He was a relatively young man. He was in his early 40s. And one of the statements he made on this verse was this. He said, "We do not know whether we will be alive or whether we will be able to transact business if we are." And since I knew him personally, it kind of hit me just a little while after he wrote that, J.W. Roberts died as a young man. It hit me as I was thinking about this the day that Doris died. I didn't know she was going to die. And I sat there and I thought, had I known she was going to die that night, would I have said anything? I would have said things I didn't say. We sat there from about 3:30 to 7:30 and said very few things, just looking at each other. I didn't know. I well remember statements that were made, and one of them was made by Bud Baker. He came to me and he said, "Lowell, I didn't know she was that bad. If I'd have known, I would have come to the hospital. I didn't know." And that's right. Bud and Jan were one of the first ones to the hospital. They were one of the first ones to my house the next morning. They would have been there. If what? If I had known, Bud says. What would I have done? If I had known. Yeah, I would have said a few things I'd like to have said. What am I saying? I'm saying that every one of us live in a world that we do not know what tomorrow will hold for us. As we began to look at this, here is a picture that kind of puts it in proper perspective. That all of a sudden, one day, there's a picture empty. If I had known. James says, "What is your life?" One day as I was keeping a diary after Doris died, I wrote these words to show what happened that week as far as death is concerned. Last Friday, and all of this is true, last Friday, 3 people died on I-5. Saturday, 53 people died in a fire at a soccer game. Sunday, one man was struck by lightning on a ball diamond and died. The same day, 85 people were killed in riots and 24 people were killed when their bus turned over. But this is but a few of the 72,000 people who died on Saturday and the 72,000 who died on Sunday. Each year, 500,000 teenagers attempt to commit suicide. 5,000 of them succeed. At noon today, Brother Daugherty was sitting at the table and went to sleep and died while sleeping. I received a call at 6:30 a.m. today telling me of a sister in Christ who had died at Cottage Grove. She was 40 years of age. This evening I received word from Mike Bryant concerning the reason he had been absent from class. His two-year-old daughter had had open-heart surgery. And then I've got, since talking with you last week, the following has happened. 72,000 people die daily. In the past 7 days, there have been 504,000 people in this world die to go meet God. Each year, there are 237,000 new widowers, 506,000 new widows. The average American wife spends 18 years of her life as a widow, and 1 out of 4 widows is under the age of 45. Now you say, "But Lowell, that was last year." Let me call your attention to this week. This week, a person wrote to me from California and said, "We buried my 9-year-old grandson yesterday." Friday night, Cal came home, was getting ready to go back to work, and he got a letter stating that his dentist, who was a personal friend, they go out and eat together and so forth, had suddenly died, and they had to make some other arrangements. He called the wife, and about May 9th, something happened, and he went in for a test, and they didn't find anything. 60 days later, he died with 5 brain tumors. Cal was going to take his Bible class to the funeral home today. He's been planning on this for weeks and weeks, and to try to show them the seriousness of life. Right after that call came in, the funeral director called and said, "We can't handle you Sunday because there's been too many people die. We have 8 funerals, I think, tomorrow, and another 7 or 8 the next day. We're too busy. Too many people have died this week." I was rather shocked to read in the Seattle Times that there are between 3,000 and 4,000 people die each week in the city of Seattle. And one thing, if you looked at the 11 o'clock news Friday night, where all the big football teams, all the football teams in high school were all having their big game down at the King Dome to start off the football season, one of the football stars in Juanita, 16 or 17 years of age, was killed by an electrical short in a sign. What is your life? How long will you be here? What was that boy going to do that very night? He was going to play football for the first time in the kingdom. What was Cal's dentist that he was going to do? They had already made plans about building certain things and doing certain things. The plans had been made. James says, what is your life? Trying to show us we don't know what it is, what our life is. He says, it is but a vapor that is here for a little while and then vanishes away. Vapor. Listen to how Job put it. He said, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and spent without hope, and are spent with hope. Oh, remember that my life is a breath. Mine eyes shall see no more good. The eye of him that seeth me shall behold me no more. Thine eyes shall be upon me, but I shall not be. As the cloud is consumed and vanisheth away, so as he that goeth down to Sheol shall come up no more. What is your life? I'll tell you what the Bible says your life is. Let me read you 12 things that the Bible pictures your life as being. First of all, it pictures it as being the same as water that is spilled on the ground. What happens? It's damp for a moment. You turn around and come back, and you never know the water was spent. It is as a shadow passing by. We see a shadow as it's going by, and it's there, and then it's gone. He said it is as a cloud that is soon disappearing. We've all looked up and seen a cloud coming, and all of a sudden it either goes or it just disappears from there. The Bible says your life has the stability of a flower or grass. That's here in the morning, bright and beautiful, and evening it's dried and gone. It pictures your life as a sleep that is here momentarily and then it's gone. Another one is, it's a dream. We've all had a dream here and then disappears. It's a hand breadth, if you want to measure it. How long is your life? About as long as my hand. It's as a shepherd's tent. A shepherd goes out and pitches his tent of a night and drives down the tent stakes. And how firmly is it planted? What do you do with the shepherd's tent? The next morning he goes around and with one jerk he pulls them up, folds his tent, and moves on. That is the stability of your life. He said it is as a tale that is told. We've all heard funny stories, haven't we? We've all heard somebody tell a story, and we sat and we laughed, but how substantial was the story? How long did it last? After you left the party, what did it mean? It was gone. Never to be reclaimed again. He says, Job says, it is a sigh, just a, it's gone. And James says, it is but a vapor. It's but a vapor that's here for just a little while, and then it vanishes away. Now, as you talk about a vapor, the word vapor literally means a puff of smoke, a mist, or a vapor is really the idea that he has there. Something that I cut out of the paper was this to tell us that. One of the cartoons, or places in front of the cartoon,
the day after the shuttle exploded was what you have to see before you. There is the shuttle with the rocket, going away into all of its glory, of where we were going to challenge the Russians and we would be the first in space. And the man took the statement from the Bible, "For as you not know what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away." One of the big problems that science has been trying to figure out since that explosion is, did they have any time? Were they warned at all? And finally, it has been answered, maybe as high as 10 seconds. Did they die any differently than you die or I die? I think not. I remember the last words that I spoke to Doris to let you know I didn't know she was going to die. It was after we had talked to the doctor, I felt a great relief. And the last thing I remember saying to her, other than I love you, was, "Honey, I feel better now. I feel like we've made the right decision." And the last words I remember her saying to me was, "Me too." I didn't know it. The doctor told me her last words on earth was, she raised her head and said, "I feel faint," and fell and died immediately. She died quicker than the people in the shuttle. And friend, you might too. And that's what I'm trying to say. It is a grievous sin for us to live with such haughtiness and pretension and cockiness and boastfulness as to make plans and say, "Here is what I will do. Here is where I will go." Oh, what sin. And what is the sin? It is leaving the Almighty God out of the picture. There is a time. There is a place. And God knows. God has a purpose. Man says God proposes, but God disposes. Let me read you what the Scripture says. Job 42:2 says, "I know that thou canst do all things, and that no purpose of thine can be restrained." Again, Haggai chapter 1, verse 6 tells us. He said, "Consider your ways. You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you're not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put into a bag with holes." In other words, whatever you try to do doesn't work out. Doesn't make any difference how you try to make your plans and your business. It doesn't work out. Why? Because God is in control. And then John says, "And this is the boldness which we have toward him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us." And that is the key. Do we truly make plans if God wills? The Apostle Paul in Acts chapter 18, verse 21 said, "If God wills, I will return to Corinth." In 1 Corinthians 4:19, he said, "If the Lord will, I will come to thee shortly." And in 1 Corinthians 16:7, he said, "If the Lord will, I will tarry with you for a certain period of time." And all of that shows that he made plans if the Lord will. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 15 through 20, he explains that when I make plans, whether I say if the Lord will or not, he said, "When I make plans, I never make them with me. The yea is the yea. When I say yes, I'll do this, then it's yes, I'll do this." He said, "No, that is not the way it is, but that's the way it is with God. Only with God, when God says yea, it'll be yea." And Paul explains, "Sometimes when I say yea, I'll come. God says nay, no you won't. Other times when God says no, or when Paul said no, I won't. God says yea, you will." And Paul said, "Don't you understand? When I write to you and when I tell you what I'm going to do, all of my plans are made with God in control." He said, "Because with me, the yea is not yea." The proverb writer says in chapter 3, verse 6, "Trust in Jehovah with all thy heart, and lean not upon thy understanding. In all thy ways, and acknowledge him, and he will direct thy path." Now let's come to the last. In verse 16 he says, "But now we give glory in your vauntings. All such glory is evil." Vauntings means boastful pretensions or arrogance. What we're going to do. Here is the plans I made. Here is what I'm going to do.
He said, when we do that, we glory. Now, the Bible explains that glorying is not wrong. The Bible teaches us that we can glory in the Lord and glory in other people and what they do, and that is not wrong. But the Bible teaches that we can glory in two ways. I can either glory with my mouth or I can glory with my life. I can tell you what I will do, or I can make plans because of my great, great intellect and confidence and health and life and stability and all of these things that are going with me. I just live with that idea in mind without understanding if God wills. The writer of the commentary that I read a moment ago, who's now dead, had this paragraph. He said, this writer heard a preacher telling of knowing a millionaire who was 35, boasted that he would live to be 100. He had the world all to his liking. Yet, in a few years later, he died by his own hand, broken in health, after spending his fortune to regain it. We hear that all the time. Now, what does James say? James then boils it down and says this. He says, your glory, your attitude, your disposition, unless you always take your life in God's hands, be thankful for what you've got, and always understand only the next breath that you take is in God's hands. And any other attitude, my beloved brother, James says 1900 years ago, is evil. Regardless of what the courts might say, regardless of what the schools might teach, regardless of the business practices you read, or regardless of whether we believe it's immoral or not, God has spoken again. Should there be one in the audience today that understands that your life is not in harmony with God's plan, if today you need to be washed in His precious blood, either through the waters of baptism or confessing your sins, would you let it be known while we stand and sing the first stanza of this song?